the Bandroom Podcast is proudly supported by Kaleidoscope Adventures. Kaleidoscope Adventures is a full-service student trip planner with more than 26 years of inspiring student travel.
Dylan and I have had positive experiences on school music trips, so we both know how much these meaningful opportunities contribute to students' musical development and create lasting memories.
Kaleidoscope Adventures specializes in organizing unique trips to over 40 student-friendly destinations.
If you're planning a student trip, you can count on the Kaleidoscope Adventures professionals to collaborate with you to organize the perfect education or performance tour.
When you're ready to plan your next adventure, visit kaleidoscopeadventures.com. That's kaleidoscopeadventures.com. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Bandroom Podcast. My name is Dylan Maddox.
And I'm Kate Nishimura.
And oh my goodness. First thing is I'm going to give my deepest, deepest Canadian sorry. It's just been so, it's been too long. That's all I have to say so far.
Yeah, it's been a while. It feels good to be back in podcast land with you and with all of you fine listeners. Mm-hmm. It has been a while and may be a while, but we'll get to that.
Yeah. Well, we'll tell you why it's been a while and why. Anyway, yeah. First of all, Kate, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Oh, I am surviving.
Yeah. It's all we can do, it right?
It's crunch time here.
You're almost a doctor.
Almost a doctor. At the time of this release, I can't do math. 2 days from that day, I will be Dr. Dylan Rook Maddox.
So exciting.
Which is very exciting.
It is exciting. Your initials already have spelt Dr. Maddox for your whole life. So the fact that it'll now be Dr. D. R. Maddox is very satisfying to me.
That was my email in undergrad, was drmaddox@mta.ca.
Did anyone ever call you doctor because they thought that that's what the DR was for?
Yes. Yeah. they called me doctor in an email, not in person.
Ah, okay.
But anyway, riveting.
Yeah.
Riveting stuff.
Yeah.
So that's one of the main reasons that it's been a while, is just because it's getting to that point in, I think, someone who's getting their doctorate semester where they have to defend and do all of that and write a dissertation, which is finished, which is exciting, as well as a little side project, which we're going to talk about. But that's why it's been weeks, actually.
Yeah.
So we're really happy to be back. And not only is Friday Defense Day, it's going to be really special because on Friday, while I am defending. Also, did you know Americans spell it differently than us?
Defense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
It's like, anyway,
I knew about color and favor and things.
But, yeah. Yeah. All it's usually just the O-U-R anyway, ones, okay. Like neighborhood, etc. Yeah. Defense with a C or an S.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So while I'm defensing that morning, a very special guest is flying in to the Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport, and that is none other than our favorite person, our joint teacher, Dr. Jillian McKay. She's a guest here at ASU next week, so I get to see her on Friday. So when she lands, she gets dropped off at the office, and ta-da, as long as I don't mess up, she gets to see Dr. Maddox. So it's kind of cool that she's the one who started me on this journey, and she's kind of at the end of my formal education anyway, because you know you're a student for life.
Yeah.
But
so I love that. Nice. And, I'm so excited that that's happening.
Yeah.
That'll be so cool. Such an exciting way to like mark the occasion, you know, because I'm sure you'll be excited to celebrate with everybody, but particularly to like have a mentor like show up just as you've kind of achieved this big milestone. I think that'll feel really good.
I think I'm going to think that for a little bit, and then Monday's going to hit, and then I'm going to have to conduct for her, And she's going to have to teach me again. And I'm going to go, oh, no.
Right back oh, no. where you began.
Yeah. The final butt kicking. Oh, here we go. And when I say final, I mean it's not going to be final. I get them for the rest of my life. But anyway, so it'll be nice to have her. She's working with the grad conductors. She's working with one of our undergraduate conducting classes. I've spent the past couple of last month, preparing Ms. Lenka's Traveler for her.
So cool.
So she's conducting Traveler next Wednesday. So a week from when this episode comes out, you can live stream it. And then I get to be on that concert also with her, which will be really cool. And with Jason Kassler, because I'll be premiering one of our composer in residence pieces by Alicia Castillo called A Garden of Roses. And I'm digging this piece. So yeah, it'll be cool. It's going to be lots of stuff going on.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But yeah, other than that, the other thing that we want to tell you is that some more content will be coming out, because part of my research was to create another podcast. And I finally got confirmation that I'm allowed to share it via this podcast, because it's not officially associated with my doctoral work anymore. But it is a podcast called Changing Your Pattern, a conductor's leadership podcast. And it's basically all the interviews I used for my research, which consisted of 6 different interviews with some really great people, those of which you've heard on this podcast, like Rob Taylor from the University of British Columbia. Who else? We have a little Colin Clark there. Matthew Arau, who is not on yet, but he is going to be on the podcast. Jody Blackshaw, yes, was excellent. As well as Jonathan Grantham was there. And then last but not least, someone who's not a band person, but she is one of the few kind of conductor servant leadership experts, Dr. Ramona Wiss, who teaches at, I can't remember which school, but she's a choral conductor, teaches in Illinois. And she wrote a book called The Conductor's Leader. And it's a really excellent book if you're looking for something to read and to grow and all that. But anyway, 6 of those interviews, as well as a little intro episode explaining what servant leadership is, why I even wanted to, you know, explore things, that will be start coming out next week, which is exciting. So if you don't hear from us, you'll be able to hear from at least me and whoever the other guest is when you hear those episodes. So we'll make sure to share where you can subscribe to that, because it won't be via the band room, but it will be connected with the band room. It's very complicated. It's not really complicated, but I'm talking too much. And anyway, so we'll make sure to post it where necessary. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm personally very excited to listen to those interviews. And although some of them are, yeah, people that we've spoken to before, to hear them speak about this topic through that lens, I'm really excited to hear it. And I know that everybody else out there will be happy to hear it too.
Yeah. And I think I initially was like, oh, you know, it'll be a thing. But when I started like synthesizing the information and to see the connecting pattern between all of the conductors, it was great. And I was, mm-hmm. as soon as I started seeing things, I was instantly excited to share. Cause the research is examining servant leadership characteristics in large ensemble conductors. And these characteristics come to us from a guy named Robert Kate Greenleaf, who started this idea of servant leadership back in the 70s. So it doesn't have, it's not the connections to, I think a lot of people connect servant leadership to like more kind of religious mm-hmm. kind of things, but this is separate from that. So there's some kind of really cool connections being like looking at who taught them, who were the leaders that they looked up to most, and most people come from servant leaders, and that's why they became servant leaders. And that's another thing of Greenleaf's, is that you, as a servant leader, you are able to create more servant leaders mm-hmm. just by being your authentic self. And then some other really cool things as well. We talked a lot about self-reflection and the importance of that, be it, you know, taking a walk outside. We've talked about that a lot on this podcast. But just actually setting aside a time to reflect on how you're leading and what's working, what's not working. having an openness for empathy and to be able to empower your students and to give them agency over the creative endeavor, which is a lot of big words. But it's those kind of ideas, and it's there's kind of a through line through all of the leaders. So I'm really excited about sharing it, and then also talking about future research, and there's possibilities for books and who knows what. So lots of exciting stuff. So next week, Changing Your Pattern will start.
That's awesome. And I think although it's separate from the band room, it's connected to the community that we are part of. And I think everyone who is in music education in whatever capacity will, I imagine, get a lot out of those episodes. So very cool. And I'm thankful.
Yeah. And even if it's not brand new, it's like, it's good reminders.
Yeah. Always good to hear stuff. Even if you know it, it's like just hearing it said slightly differently or by somebody else or whatever can always be good. But yeah, I was going to say that I'm really thankful that that set of interviews exists, because it will allow me to be really present in the other work that I'm doing for the next little while, which is part of the reason why we won't be recording episodes for a little bit, and we will instead be sharing other exciting, relevant content. But yeah, I will be performing full time for a little while this spring, which is something that I've not ever really done. So I'm excited.
And we get a little taste of it before Christmas, wasn't it? Or
I did, yeah. So I had a short contract just doing a holiday show. It was a jamboree. It was a wild time. But yeah, this is going to be my first sort of like full length theater performing contract. And I've done lots of work in the past, like playing in the pit for theater shows, or, you know, obviously as a composer, I spend a lot of time in performance settings, but I'm usually the person like off stage, or I speak on the stage and then I let the performers actually do the performing. So it's a different role for me to be the one actually singing and playing instruments and dancing and acting and all the things. So yeah, I got a little taste of it at the end of 2022, and I'm ready for more. It's going to be fun.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. It'll be great. If I, no, there's no way I can get there.
I know. I wish that's the thing too, is even people like that are local, it's kind of out of the way, but that's okay. I'll report back afterwards. I'll have lots to share. I imagine that I'm going to learn a lot and I'm going to want to sing a lot more after. So I'm excited about that.
Speaking of singing, not really at all.
Oh, I was going to say, wow, you got a segue.
this is another Hanging with Dylan and Kate episode. But before we get to that, Kate, could you sing us a favor? you don't have to sing it.
I was going to say, you know, if you'd give me a little bit more notice, I can probably make a little jingle about people. Come
on, let's walk the talk here.
Yeah. Well, okay. You know what?
Don't do it.
Next time I'm going to do it. I'm going to surprise you. I'm going to have a little song. But for now, I will speak it and just simply ask for those of you who are listening, if you can make sure that you've subscribed to the Band Room podcast, give us a like, give us a follow, share an episode or two with a friend or a teacher or somebody that you think would enjoy it. And if you'd like, you can leave us a rating and or a review on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, wherever it is that you're listening. It really helps us out. It helps people find the podcast, helps us grow our audience, and we really, really appreciate it.
We sure do. And if you want to find another way to support the podcast, you can do so by joining our Patreon, which, guess what, is going to start having things on it again.
Yep.
You can visit patreon.com/bandroompod. That's patreon.com/bandroompod for more bonus episodes, t-shirts, sweaters, stickers, whatever you want. Well, not really whatever you want, but is provided is there. Yeah, those things. as well as hopefully some Zoom hangs. I feel like I've said this too much, but we're going to do it. I'm going to do it.
It's going to happen.
I'm going to be Dr. Maddox on Friday, and then after that, it's smooth sailing.
I know. It's going to be great.
So now that we got the business out of the way, this is a Dylan and Kate episode, which means that we've surveyed our listeners for questions. And we have four whopping questions here. I'll tell you more about them later, but like where they came from. But I swear we didn't make these up. These are from an actual person. So the first question is, what plans for podcast topics do you have in the future?
Well, in the immediate future. I feel like we should have
had a business meeting before this.
I know, right? In the immediate future, it's going to be, you know, like we talked about, the interviews that you've already done with those amazing people. Following that, we haven't talked about this, but maybe we can, maybe this is a, you know, our listeners are going to hear us in real time figure out what we want to address going forward.
Yeah. A couple things, I think. One of which we already announced and didn't do. So, and it was the Behind the Score series, where we were going to talk to composers and like basically analyze their piece in the episode and talk about the ins and outs of it.
Yeah.
So that is one thing that will happen because I keep telling people about it. So that's happened. And we got a little bit of that leadership stuff like Kate mentioned. And also, although Kate is going to be very busy, I am still here and I have lots of people in person here in Arizona that I want to talk to still, including Jamal Duncan, Dr. Jamal Duncan, who's the associate director of bands here, is a wonderful conductor in person and one of my closest friends, as well as an end of the year catch up with Dr. Jason Kassler, in who's he was on like my second season whenever I did it by myself, as well as people like Joe Bergstaller, who's one of my trumpet teachers here. And there's lots of other really great people that you'll be able to hear before Kate and I are back together again. But yeah, so there's those things to look forward to.
Yeah,
I
don't that's know, awesome.
Topics wise, we just kind of stick to the interview stuff.
Yeah, I think like what we've done so far anyway is try to really keep the spotlight on the guest. And so although we do prompt with certain questions and certain topics, it's sort of like we just like to see where the conversation goes. And if there's something that the guest shares that is really interesting, that piques our curiosity a little bit more, we might ask about that. But usually we're just interested in getting to know these people a little bit more and learning about how they got to be where they are now and all of that. So I think that format has been working, but yeah, I agree that the digging into the composer's pieces, I think that'll be really fun to do. I think it would be really cool. This is something we haven't actually really talked about, but I think it would be cool to interview some people that are not necessarily conductors or composers, but that are somehow connected to our world in other ways, to just spotlight some more unique perspectives in our industry. So whether that's, you know, on the recording side of things or the like publishing side of things or that kind of stuff, just branching out a little bit more, but still you know, highlighting stories and perspectives from people who work closely with this community, with this world. Because I personally, I think that would be really cool. And I think other people would like to hear stuff like that too.
No, only conductors. No, as soon as you said those areas, I thought of two people and I think we're probably thinking of the same people. But yeah, there's lots of possibilities to explore. So there's, there's your first answer.
Yeah.
Next one is one we've answered before, but at least whenever I talk about my favorite piece, it is something that's ever changing. So this very kind and wonderful person asked us, what are both of your top three fave works for band and why?
Okay. Yeah, so we've both...
I don't know why I said it like that.
We've both talked about this before, just in the sense that I think we both have a hard time pinpointing one or even three favorites because they're changing all the time. And the things that we feel drawn to or the things that we feel excited about are different, you know, week to week, month to month, year to year kind of thing. So it's tough, but maybe we just like, what are three that you, that stand out for you right now and why? I don't know.
Well,
Or we can go back and forth one.
This
one,
is a real one. Oh my goodness. There's a plethora of sounds.
I was going to say, it sounds like there's like chimes.
Yeah.
What's going on?
They always leave the door open. And then I think the choir's upstairs cranking up here, and who knows what's happening in the theater below me.
It's just a day in the life.
My first piece is one, we have this wind rep class that we're in right now, which is really great. We just get to talk about wind rep. But we have someone who zooms in every week, and it's none other than like, I'm not even selling this too short. None other than like band legend, British band legend, Timothy Rainish. He actually zooms in every single week and just chats with us. And we say, hey, Tim, what do you think of this piece? And he's like, oh, I think it's absolute rubbish. And then, terribly boring, terribly boring. And I think that if Tim listens to this, I think he'll agree that that was a great impression.
Mm-hmm.
But he might not. Anyway, so the great thing about Tim is he has excellent, excellent taste. And he brings me, music that I should know. And one of the pieces is actually, I think it was written the year we were born.
Okay.
But it's a piece called Danceries. And it's by Kenneth Hesketh. I think U of T Wind Symphony actually did it this year. But it's like four movements, kind of based off of or inspired by a book of old fiddle tunes. But he kind of reinvents them, and they're really, really great textures, and it's fun music to listen to and play and conduct. And so that's one piece. I'm trying to think of other ones now. That I'm not. I always say Kevin Day's concerto is one of my favorite. I really do like it. I know we recorded it last year, but it was a really special thing, and I'm really glad that I'm probably going to get to see Kevin at the end of May, and then potentially again in June.
That's awesome.
So it's a lot of Kevin Day in my life.
Yeah,
but I'll take it. Yep. Anyway, that piece. And then a third one. Oh no. Do I have to say one by you?
No, you don't have to. You also have to say why, according to the question.
Oh, geez. I kind of gave a reason for Danceries. Yeah, I just think it's really great writing.
Mm-hmm.
I used Kevin in my comps, actually, because I think that piece kind of represents a new kind of generation of composers being welcomed into the fold, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We always talk about like Vaughan Williams and people writing these pieces based off of the music of their time. And I think Kevin did a really good job of incorporating those inspirations in his concerto, be it the influences of his parents or the music that he listens to or the music that he performs. I mean, he just gave a jazz piano recital at the University of Minnesota, I think. So there's like a lot of those influences that he really successfully and tastefully incorporates into the concerto. Is it some of it's unplayable? Yes. but it is I think a really great piece that's worth being on my list of top three.
Totally.
Okay, I need one more though. I know this is also not he just won the Ravelli Award, actually. James M. David. And I'm not naming the piece that won. His piece Urban Light, I really love.
Mm-hmm.
And it's based off an art kind of installation in Chicago, I think. But it's got electric guitar in it. It's really exciting.
So cool.
I don't know. I like it. Yeah. That's all. That's my reason.
That's a good enough reason.
How about you?
Oh, I have such a hard time with this question. I'm just going to say things that come to mind as they come to mind. So, this is not by any stretch like the best piece. I don't know. I don't pick favorites of things, but I'm just going to mention a few things that I like. So there is a piece that I got to play many, many years ago when I was in the National Youth Band of Canada. Shout out to our CBA friends. And
NYB, yeah.
It was called Sun Paints Rainbows on the Vast Waves by David Bedford. It's an interesting piece. I know some people that don't like it that much, but I found that the experience of playing that as a group, particularly with other young musicians that were really, really keen to challenge themselves and do something that felt impossible. I think maybe the reason that I list that as a piece that I like is actually just because of the experience that I remember that I associate with that piece. Because performing it and actually doing it, nailing it, and it was great. Like, it was such a satisfying thing to achieve together. And it was also, I don't know, I think it prompted me to think about composers as artists, like sound artists, as opposed to like, I don't know, especially at the time I was young, I was really into songwriting and pop music and stuff like that. And to think about the role of a composer as like painting an image with sound, that was maybe one of the first pieces that really, really made me think about that. And that was possible, and that everybody's parts were like just these fragments of things. And it really only was satisfying when everyone was playing together. So like the whole effect of the group is what painted the image. None of us could do it on our own. So I don't know, that's just something that was a really kind of standout experience, musical experience for me. At that time. So that's something that I thought of when you asked this question. Another one that I thought of is Gloriosa by Yasuhide Ito. Just an epic, epic piece of music. Every time I hear it, whether in a concert or a recording, I get goosebumps at like certain moments. It's just, it never fails. And I think music that can do that is pretty spectacular, because there are things that are like really, really cool or really nice or whatever. But to have something that creates that physical bodily response every single time is pretty powerful to me. So that would be another. And a third piece. This feels too difficult. This feels like too much pressure to choose a piece of music. Okay, I'll just choose another one that comes to mind. Okay,
I usually get angry at people when they ask me this.
Yeah, I know, me too, but it's okay. We're going to commit to it. So, all right. I really love Sanctuary by Frank Ticelli. It takes a very, very long time to build to the moment that feels good. But when you get there, boy, do you ever get there. You know, like, it's just one of those things. It's like, I don't know, like an 11-minute long, like slow, gradual build to something. But it's just, I don't know, it makes me feel stuff. And again, just like with Gloriosa, it always makes me feel that stuff. And there aren't that many pieces that like I can do over and over and over again and still feel that way about it. And actually, speaking of our friend and teacher, Jillian McKay, I heard that piece, Sanctuary, performed by the U of T Wind Ensemble when I was in high school, and my school took a trip to go and watch a U of T Wind Ensemble concert. And I heard that piece there, and that was the first time I'd heard the piece, and I was just mesmerized by it. And then I ended up going to U of T myself to study there. And in my final year, Dr. McKay programmed that piece again, but I was not
a McKay classic.
I was not assigned to it. You know how like people rotate within the Wind Ensemble, right? And so I was assigned to other pieces. And I went up to her and I said, look, this was the piece that I first like really fell in love with everything when I was in like high school and we came to watch you play. And like, it would just be the biggest full circle thing if I could play in this piece for this concert. She said, okay. And she just moved some things around and I got to play in that piece on the concert. So actually, you know, as much as I don't like these kinds of questions, I think what I've noticed about myself in saying this is that the pieces of music that I tend to hold in high esteem are the ones that are attached to meaningful experiences rather than like, this is the best piece ever written for the medium or this, like, it's more so like, these are the experiences that I cherish. So that's interesting.
And now a word from our sponsor. You know, Kate, I often think back to my time at Music Amp and how important that time was not only in my growth as a musician, but as a person.
I feel the same way. My first time performing my own music in front of a big audience was at a music camp, and many of the people I met at camp are still friends and colleagues today.
The Interprovincial Music Camp is a comprehensive music camp for ages 9 to 17, with programming for all levels of band, orchestra, choir, musical theater, rock, jazz, and songwriting. IMC's faculty includes members of major symphony orchestras, university music faculty, and Juno and Grammy Award nominees and winners.
For over 60 years, IMC has been hosted at the beautiful Camp Manitou on Manitouwabing Lake, located in the heart of the Muskoka Parry Sound region of Ontario, Canada. IMC facilities are second to none, with fully equipped cabins, outstanding meals, and a special diet chef on site.
IMC is unique because it is centered around music, but also offers a true summer camp experience, including traditional activities such as swimming, sailing, water skiing, beach volleyball, and much more, as well as evening programs each night after the amazing faculty concerts.
IMC is an inclusive camp where there's a place for everyone. Don't miss the opportunity to grow, be inspired, have fun, and make memories and friendships that will last a lifetime.
Stay connected by following them at imc.ca on Instagram and TikTok and at campimc.ca on Facebook. To learn more and to register, visit campimc.ca. That's campimc.ca.
A piece of true artistic merit. I'm kidding. I hate that term. Speaking of which, if you hate that term also, you should go check out an article that Jody Blackshutt has wrote. It's on her website. And it's all about quality and it's great. So you should
we can
that.
Link it in our show notes. Yeah.
I have two bonus ones. Okay. Because get ready for name drop city.
I'm ready.
Because last week, I was hanging out with none other than Michael Markowski. And the reason I said that is because it reminded me of his music. Because, you know, anytime I did an honor band, I'd always do like Cave You Fear, which I think is a great little high school kind of piece.
But are you going to say City Trees?
And then I do like City Trees. It's a very important piece. I think its topic is very important as well. I was going to say Saturn Returns. It's just a jam.
Such a good one.
Yeah, so that's a good one. Anyway, any of his music's great.
Yeah.
He's also an ASU grad. That's part of the reason he was in town. Not for an ASU event. He was taking part in a film thing, but he studied film here.
Yeah.
And there's a long story to why that has happened, and he'll tell you it when he's on the podcast.
Yeah, I was just going to say, we should have him on soon.
Yeah. Anyway, I said, because we had just met, and I said, I'm glad you're leaving, because I think you might be one of my best composer friends. I can just feel it, Michael. Like, he was someone who's like, oh, we'll get in trouble if you're around too long.
I need to mention something funny about him because I don't know, it's just coming to mind right now. So when I used to live in Toronto, which everyone knows I don't anymore, but I always thought of Michael Markowski when I was walking around the city streets and there were trees just growing in the concrete, you know. I always thought about City Trees. And so there was a bit of construction outside of my apartment, and they put these tiny little twiggy trees in. And so I named the tree outside my apartment. I flipped the vowels in his name. So I named this tree Markle Mikowski.
What?
Yeah.
I'm sending him this little clip.
I think I've told him this in passing before. Oh, and okay. So then I called the tree Mark Mikowski. But yeah, that's my story about this composer and the trees, the city trees. So I took city trees to a very literal level. And every time I go back to Toronto, I check on the tree and see if it's still doing all right.
Really?
Yep.
Good for you.
Yep. That's, you know, no one should be surprised by weird tree things that I do at this point.
True. That's true. So there you go. Look at all these things. Then the other reason I was saying, the reason that Michael and I got along so well is because I started with saying, oh, we have a mutual friend, and that's Joanne Harris, another fantastic composer that you should go check out her music.
Yes.
One Piece, Lighthouse, Dimensions, ooh. And then also I found out through Michael, it might be a lie. She might have to correct this, but I'm going to share it anyway. She's writing a piece for Eric Lung at Oregon State.
I saw something about that, so I think that's
utilizing
correct.
Whale sounds and things.
Yeah. So cool.
Yeah. It's very exciting.
We know those are two really cool people, don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah. Also, can we talk about, I don't know about this. You've corrected me a couple times about it. What's the definition of a name drop?
What? I've corrected you on this. What do you mean?
Yeah, because because it's hard because you're actually like one of my best friends. And then I have to say like, oh, you know, I was talking to Kate.
Yeah.
And then people are like, who's Kate? I'm like, oh, Kate Nishimura.
Yeah.
And they're like, and then I feel like I'm name dropping you, but I'm not I don't mean to.
I don't think that's name dropping.
Like, I don't.
You're just using my name because that's what I'm called and I'm who you were talking to. I think that's normal.
But
I think name dropping is when you're like, okay, you're trying to get in with a group of people. You're trying to get, you know, a job, or you're trying to get a gig, like you're whatever. And you use other people's names that of people that you don't even really know that well, but it's like, well, I hung out with this person, and you say it to try to get them to think that you're cool. Like, I don't think that referencing someone that you know is name dropping, but you know, folks out there listening, correct us if we've got it wrong.
Yeah. So I think the way in which I used Michael, I think that was name droppy. I call him Michael because we're on a first name basis. Michael Markowski. I'm done. Okay, we need to move on. Next question. Here we go. Oh, here's a good one. I'm going to answer this one first.
Okay.
If there is one instrument you'd like to see included or featured more in works for band, what would it be? And now I need to admit something to you, fine listeners. Every single question that's being asked today was sent via our stories. You know, you ask a question on stories by my wife, who is a wonderful harpist. Not any kind of harpist, the world's most followed harpist on social media, Harpist KT, Kristen Tuchko. So she asked us all these questions. So I think I'm obligated to say the harp. The harp should be involved in band more. But then if I talk to her, she might not agree with that because, and she always says, I don't actually hate playing in band, but I know she doesn't like playing in band. Mm-hmm. And any composers out there who are listening, if you're going to use a harp, please write for it and don't just write glisses, because that's what makes artists like her not want to play in band.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm looking at you, John Williams. but I think actually, I'm trying to think now. I just listened to something that had harp in it for band that was very good. Maybe it was the Danceries. It might have been Danceries. Anyway. The harp is, I'll just go for that, especially if I don't have to move it.
Yeah. I have to admit, like, as a composer of band music, that I've never written for harp in any of my pieces. And that's because
if you do write for it, you got to get your, like, Sam Adler book out and, like, learn how to write for pedals again.
Exactly. So the reason I haven't is not because I don't think that the texture and sound is beautiful and has a place within this ensemble, it's because I have no idea how the harp works. And so I would be like, I think that I write music that makes sense because I understand, I'm writing for instruments that I understand from firsthand experience, right? Mm-hmm. But I've never touched a harp. I've never like really learned how harp works. I do follow Kristen on social media and I love all of her videos and I'm amazed at how quickly she has amassed such a following of people all over the world that are obsessed with the harp. I think that's so, so cool. But yeah, I don't really know how it works. So maybe one day I'll write for the harp in a wind ensemble piece.
A very strange instrument, I think. But anyway.
But it's beautiful and very cool. So it's on my list of like things to do someday in my life.
Okay. Do you have an instrument that you think should be utilized more?
Yeah, I think that there should be piano and everything all the time. Not all the time. Okay, I'm exaggerating. I really love using the piano in band pieces. I know not everyone likes that. And I know logistically it doesn't always work and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But when possible, I really, really love using the piano in band pieces. And I enjoy pieces that feature it. In addition to that, I think it would be cool if there were more, like if there was cello in wind band pieces, because like sometimes we get string bass, right? Mm-hmm. But the cello sound, I think, would actually be so beautiful to blend with clarinets and horns and euphoniums. Like, I think that would be really, really cool. One day I'll write something for banjo. Because I'm a banjo player now, ooh. Apparently. I say apparently, but yeah, actually,
I saw that story recently. True.
I play every day, and I'm getting paid to play it in a country show. So that makes me a real banjo player.
No wonder you're practicing.
But yeah, I think incorporating the banjo in a band piece would be super cool. But I don't. That's not really my answer to the question. Like, I don't think it should be included all the time. It's just that I think it's something I'll do one day, and it'll be fun.
There's precedent for it. Mm. Three Penny Music, Kurt Vile.
Yep.
There's banjo part.
Yep.
And then the cello thing. Mm-hmm. For some reason, cello is really big in European wind bands.
I've seen that a little bit.
So it's usually quite similar to a trombone part.
Yep. But we don't really see that a lot here. Navarro. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. So maybe that's a thing.
Johann Composers out there. A lot for cello.
I've never done it, but I think people should. So I will start with myself and I will do it someday.
Yeah. And then piano. Yeah, I agree with piano. It's just often the pianists that get assigned to my ensembles don't want to be there.
Yeah.
So maybe that's a me problem. I need to create a culture in which you want to be there.
Well, no, I actually think that that's partially the composer responsibility as well, right? Like if composers are just adding in a piano part to just add it in, it's like Kristen saying, that the harp parts in band pieces are just glisses on end. Like that's the only thing that the composer thinks that the harp mm-hmm. can do. I think pianists maybe are just... they're not being used to their full potential. Like the instrument isn't being used in a really intentional, meaningful way sometimes. And pianists tend to be the kind of people that like, they really care about their solo rep and their chamber rep and all that stuff. So I understand that maybe at that stage of like your studies and stuff, like not wanting to do that. But maybe if composers wrote really cool stuff for the piano and the band, the pianists would be really excited to do it. I don't know.
Yeah. Work harder.
I'm engaged to a pianist. So I'm, who had never known anything about band and is now like, band is so cool. So,
Yeah. There you go. There's a couple instruments to ponder. And maybe you want to let us know. Maybe you like the whirly things that are used in, what's that? Angels in the Architecture.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Accordion. I don't know.
Accordion would be cool. It's just that it's such a, anyway, there are lots of things.
Okay. Yeah. Let's not go there. I don't know where you were going, but, what's the, I got, We have one more question.
Okay.
This is also from my beloved wife. Why are concertos not seen as often in band concerts as orchestra concerts?
That's an interesting question.
I have an answer, but.
Okay, go.
Do you mind? Okay. So I think it's involved in our histories as ensembles. The orchestra has been around a lot longer. So there's been, like, as much as everyone likes to think they're innovative, there has been a bit of a standard kind of concert layout for orchestras that has been around longer than what we have in band land. So just the idea that, like, you start with an overture or a fanfare or something, and then there's like a little longer piece. And then usually right before intermission, there's always a concerto. And then after intermission, your big symphony or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of one reason. Our history is from a military ensemble. And I'm sure, you know, you can be in that area of thought where we actually come from Mozart Grand Partita and from the Dvorak Serenade and all of that really high, you know, art music. But let's be honest, we do come from military bands. So, like, there wasn't a big thing there. And we didn't have the repertoire that there. And it wasn't until, like, Sousa and Gilmore and all of these people that they were featuring, you know, Herbert L. Clark on solos and things like that. And now we have lots of great concertos. Mm-hmm. They take a lot of time and you need someone to play them. And we don't have as many professional wind bands as there are professional orchestras that can play these concertos. There you go. A history lesson with future Dr. Maddox.
Almost doctor. Yeah, I mean, I don't have much to add. I think that's just true because historically that's kind of where the different ensembles split in how they're structured and all of that. I will add also that I think, as you mentioned, there aren't as many professional wind bands as there are professional orchestras. And I think that's a significant factor because if the majority of what's happening with wind bands is happening at an institutional level or, like, you know, educational ensembles, even community bands and things like that, the people who are participating, like, it's everyone learning alongside one another, and the pieces that are written for this kind of ensemble are written with that in mind. And so even going back to the Grand Partita and all of that stuff, like, those were ensemble pieces, right? They were like individual persons, featured things were integrated within the whole piece rather than having one star person at the front with accompaniment happening, right? It's more the group effort and everybody's featured in different ways, I think, is kind of the wind band approach just in general. But yeah, there are many amazing concertos now. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Yeah.
You know, Joel Puckett's got a bunch. Kevin's Day's got a bunch now.
Yeah.
Actually, I think, he was just at NASA, the saxophone conference, because one of his was being played there. And the reason he's going to be here, he's going to he says he might be. I don't want to, he might listen to this and be like, I'm not, what are you talking about, Dylan? No one's seen him in May. He's supposed to be here for the National Tuba Conference, iTech, which is celebrating 50 years this year, which is very exciting. So he's got some pieces. I don't know if one of his concertos is being played or not. But anyway, there's lots of great composers that have. I think Alex Shapiro has some great concertos. Mm-hmm. Anyway, there you go. So some stuff for you. Also, my last point on this concerto thing, I think a lot of composers might adopt the stereotype that it's hard to write solos that are accompanied with a wind ensemble because of our, I put this in quotations, volume. Because over the past months, I've had to already fight this assumption. Just stuff like that. I think that lives within our histories and within our natural assumptions to how our instruments sound together. Those are all the questions.
Yeah. They're good questions. Thank you,
Anything
Kristen.
Else? Thank you, Kristen.
Yeah.
You should go follow her on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, not Twitter. She just put out a single When I said a single, I meant an EP.
An EP. So good.
Yeah. So it will help you sleep. She's now going to have to give me some sponsorship money. Okay. Anyway, on that note, it's been great catching up with you, Kate. I'm glad we could have this time together.
Yeah, you too. I'm looking forward to hearing everything that happens in the next little while from you and guests. And I'm looking forward to reporting back to our wonderful community when I'm back on the other side of this big adventure. And I'll just say a big thank you to everybody who's listening, who listens to us ramble in these hanging out episodes. Thanks for sticking with us. And we'll see you soon.
Whole 48 minutes. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for spending time with us in the band room. If you want to learn more about anything we discussed in today's episode, check out the links found on our website, bandroompod.com.
If you liked what you heard, make sure to subscribe to the Bandroom Podcast, give us a rating and a review, and tell all your friends about how much you enjoyed it.
If you really love the show, maybe you should consider becoming part of our Patreon community, where you can support BRP and get some extra incentives in return. Or you can buy some sweet, sweet BRP merch, helping to offset podcast hosting costs and investments into new equipment so that we can continue to bring you great content and great people.
Follow us on social media on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube to keep up with what's on the go. If you have any thoughts on today's episode, leave us a comment on our website, bandroompod.com, where your comment might be featured on a future episode of BRP. Our theme music is Skyline, composed by EKR Hamill and performed by Dr. Jillian McKay and the University of Toronto Wind Ensemble.
Stay safe and be well, bandies. Thanks again for stopping by the band room.